Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. We are exploring the question, how do I live my best life right now? I am your host, Kari Vantine.
Welcome to Wild and Awake, everyone. And today we are so lucky to have with us Ken Page. Welcome, Ken.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Kari.
I'm thrilled to have you. I'm excited about today. Yeah. I'd like to share a little bit about Ken to begin with before we dive in. Ken Page, LCSW, is a renowned psychotherapist and a leading voice of hope and wisdom for everyone seeking to find and cultivate healthy, lasting love. He is the host of the Deeper Dating podcast and the author of the best-selling book, Deeper Dating, How to Drop the Games of Seduction and Discover the Power of Intimacy. He has been featured in O, the Oprah Magazine, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Cosmopolitan, The Advocate, and more. Ken is passionate about helping people understand the search for love as one of the greatest spiritual adventures in life. And he celebrates the inclusion of the LGBTQ community in the banquet of wiser relationship advice. I have followed Ken for a while, and his podcast is tender, sometimes edgy, really inclusive, and from that found my way to Ken's amazing intensive course. And that is actually how I really got to know Ken over the last few years. And so it's with incredible, deep appreciation and respect that I have Ken with us here today. Thank you for being with us, Ken.
Mari, thank you. And that respect is really mutual, really mutual. The work that you do in the world, who you are, inspired me during the intensive and inspires me now. So I'm really happy to be invited.
It's for the audience who's watching this right now, it's one of the great honors I have when in speaking and doing these interviews is actually speaking to people who I believe are thought leaders and who are really cutting edge in terms of thinking outside of the box. And Ken is one of these people. And today we're going to play in some of the territory that I feel has deeply impacted my life. I'm a very private person in many ways about my private life. And today I'm going to be sharing a bit more openly. And one of the beautiful pieces out of my work with Ken has been that in my life, I have a wonderful partner. And this came from learning pieces from Ken's work. I would say I have an incredible life and I've had amazing relationships. And I have found it very hard to be deeply met. So part of what we're going to explore today, and I just bow my head to you, Ken, because some of these tools that I've learned that have actually allowed this relationship to come into my life have been ones that I've learned from the deep work and the exploration of with you. So thank you. We get to begin there because that to me is, you know, when somebody impacts and changes our life, that's something we want to share with others. And I would like to share Ken's work because I believe that it is deeply impactful in this way.
Kari, thank you so much.
So where I'd like to jump in is a question I'm asking all the speakers, because this is this event is Wild and Awake, and it's really about thinking differently. It's about enlivening our lives and coming into this place of being actually alive in our lives. So the sub question that everyone is we're exploring under is, how do I live my best life right now? Not necessarily 5 years or 10 years, but right now. And from where you stand, what comes for you?
You know, there's this wonderful quote, which is that the most important thing in life is to make the most important thing the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really true. But I want to shift that a little and say that the most important thing in life to answer that question is to make your very center your very center. And to live from there and to learn how to hold the essence of your being with kindness, with grace, with space, with enjoyment. Nothing, I think, is more seminal than that ability to hold our most intimate self with those kind of treasuring hands. And if we want to change our life, if we want to connect to our magic, if we want to be rooted in our power and our gifts, I think that that is the simplest, most loving way to manifest that. And that's what we'll be talking about today in this interview, is exactly how to do that.
Thank you, Ken. And I would say, you know, that that sense of center has actually been one that I've worked with. I've studied with spiritual people. It is something we talk a lot about, like, oh yeah, coming back and owning the center. We talk about the little S and the big S for spirit and self. And yet, amazingly, I find that when it comes to relating to another human, often that essence of self goes someplace else. It gets lost.
Yes.
In the translation. And in our modern world, a lot of the relatedness, whether it's relating to dear friends or in the intimacy world of looking for a partner, or I would also say there's a lot of our audience who are already in partnerships, but may actually feel like that person doesn't really know them, right? That there's a sense of like this self, wherever this is in the center, we're going to be playing with this today, is actually, you know, this is the gem.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that gem is so connected, amazingly, how the world was built, how we were built, that Leonard Cohen says that there's a crack in all of us, and that's where the light comes through.
I love that quote.
Amazingly, the places we feel the most insecure, the places we fit in the least, the places we're the most upset at ourselves or judgmental about ourselves for, is exactly where those deepest gifts lie. So that comes into highlight in an intimate relationship. And so this holding of self, this treasuring of self, is, yes, about our most beautiful parts, the parts that radiate, the parts that shine, the parts that have magic, but they're also about holding the places where we feel broken and finding the gift exactly in the center of that, because we get the most broken where we are the most sacred, the most beautiful, the most meaningful. And so that kind of holding is the key to taking these concepts and making them real in our relationships, in our lives.
You've gone right to like the heart of the heart of the heart. And I want to say that one of the pieces for me in really finding partnership was allowing myself to show the parts of me that were, which I was really hiding, which yes. were, I thought were the most broken and undesired parts, which I have loved learning how to bring out as what we might call my core gifts. And so this, We're speaking about some words right now. I'd love to give people the context of what this means. Would you explain a little bit about the center core and like how are we designed and what are we doing to protect ourselves? Because honestly, I think I might be able to hang out with you or a few people right here in my core, but when I meet somebody to begin with, it's not the piece that comes up first. It's not the piece.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially the most vulnerable parts.
Yeah. Yeah. Brené Brown says it great. She says, vulnerability, the first thing I look for in you and the last thing I'm going to show you.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about.
Vulnerability. Yeah. And the thing you just touched on too, it's like our most broken parts. That's not the part of me that I was taught to show people. Maybe ever, right? And maybe even, you know, the most close people to me might be the people I'm actually afraid will discover that broken part versus leading with it.
Yes. And, you know, I don't want to disclose anything confidential from the beautiful work that we did together, but I will say this because it's something that in my work as a therapist, I saw again and again, which led me to these insights, which I'm going to give you all a framework of this so you'll really get it in a simple way. But just to say that the parts that you were just describing, as the parts that you felt ashamed of or that you didn't want to show were the parts that me, listening to you, I felt awe over those parts. And that's what I discovered again and again in my work as a therapist that led me to do this work and led me to write my kind of like original piece, which was How Your Deepest Insecurities Reveal Your Greatest Gifts, which kind of went viral and was read by millions of people, was that with my clients, the parts that they felt the most tender and ashamed about were the parts that I saw as the most beautiful. And then in my own journey, the parts that I felt the most ashamed of were the parts that saved my life, built my practice, and helped me find love. But who knew? And that's why in the intensive, we spend half the intensive, we spend 3 months identifying these parts because they're so counterintuitive. But let me give a little map here for everybody to kind of make it clear what we're talking about.
And I believe that in our 45 minutes here, we actually can't, people can get what we're talking about because this is really, really usable.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right now. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. In this little bit of time, you are going to end up with the beginning sense of your core gifts, their power and their beauty, and a sense of the promise of what it's going to mean as you hold them with dignity and treasuring how your light is going to shine and how your world is going to shift. That is our ambitious goal for this time together. And I believe we can do it.
I like big ambition. It's good.
Yes, it's me good. Too.
And I would say even just finding the way there.
Yeah.
Finding the way there because that opens that door.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, okay. So here's what I'd like you all to do. I'd like you to imagine an image of a target. And let's say that target has just a few concentric rings. That target is a map of yourself. And let's imagine that the closer you get toward the bullseye is your deepest, most authentic self. It's the beating heart of your humanity. It's where you are the most beautiful, the most mystical, the most powerful, the most magical, but it's also the places, these are also the places where there's fear. They're the places where you feel like you're not enough. They're the places where the memory of wounding live. They're the places where you feel like you're too much, too powerful, you kind of like mow over people. And the places where you feel like, oh, damn, I am just so different that I can't show this. I'm just so different. These are the places where your genius lies, and genius is complex, but they're the beating heart of your humanity. So that's your center. That's what I call your gift zone. It's where you feel the warmth and the aliveness of your humanity, and you hold it with care and tenderness. And I'll teach you a gorgeous, gorgeous meditation for learning how to do that in a few minutes. That's your gift zone. That's like where you are the essence of you. You can be hurt here the most. You can feel the most joy here. You can soar here. You can be touched by art and music and nature and love in the deepest way here. And when you are here in your sadness and your joy, you are somehow lit from within. There's a luminosity that is the essence of you that doesn't exist in any of the other zones in the same way. So that's the gift zone. But it's not like we could just say, oh yeah, that's where I should be. It's a scary place. It's an intense place. It's a vulnerable place. It's probably a place we've been shamed, humiliated, and taken advantage of as well. So, it's a journey. It's a lifelong journey to learn to live in that space and heal the wounds of self-hate and trauma that make it hard to go there. That's your beautiful gift zone. So because it's so intense, because it's so charged, because it's so different, we protect ourselves. And let's say the next zone out is your zone of protection. So let's say where you're in the zone of protection, but you're not too far from the gift zone. Maybe you're like watching too much TV, or you're like zoning out or vegging out a little, or in your close relationships, you're staying connected, but not deeply connected. The further out you go toward the outside of this target, the more disconnected you are. The safer you are, the more protected you are, and the more disconnected. So when you go out into those further zones of protection, it's like you have armor, you have defenses. You are wild horses are not going to get you to show that tender stuff in the middle. And then when you go out furthest, you're in the zone of disconnection, and that's a dark and cold and scary place. You're so protected that you're empty. You're so far from the sun in the center of your being that there's an emptiness that's actually dangerous. This is the land of addiction. This is the place of like the deepest grief, pain, and alienation, most of all. There's the map. There's the map. Mm. And what you could do, even right now, imagine you have a push pin. And you're going to put the push pin, like as you're listening to this and thinking about it, right at where you are now. Are you in the middle of the zone, of the gift zone? Are you on the outside of it? Are you slightly in the zone of protection? Maybe you need a few push pins because you're in a few places at once. Just take a minute to think about where you are. And our journey is to gain the wisdom to live in the center with self-treasuring. And self-treasuring is the key. So I'll just give you some examples. I grew up as a gay kid. I was born in the mid-50s. Parents who were Holocaust survivors. It was not an easy world to be a really sensitive kid in. So I felt broken. I felt shame and I felt self-hate. I hated this 8-year-old chubby, faggy kid. Hated him. Yeah. And I loved him somewhere inside. But I was mortified by him and I knew he had to go. And this is true for so many of us. If you think back to the places where you were young and you were so alive and that aliveness got hurt, got wounded, got injured, the task is to go back there to those orphaned parts of self and learn to treasure them. And I'll give you like the quick picture. As you do that, your entire sense of self-organization will shift. You will become organized around treasuring those parts of you. You will radiate a sense of who you are. You will live your mission more. You'll be a lot kinder with your foibles and your brokenness and your shame. And people experience you then more and more as someone really, really special. This is the reclaiming of original self that is our life journey. And it's the intimacy journey. And the other miracle is that as you do this, you will lose your taste for relationships that chip away at your sense of dignity and self-worth. And you will get more and more attracted to and attractive to people who treasure you for who you are. It's a miracle, but it happens because finally you're not against yourself, you're radiating yourself. And that's a journey that's very powerful.
Ooh, I love where we just went. My whole system, I'm hoping those of you who are listening, can you just feel that percolating? That sense of the shifting. Mm. And thank you.
So, yeah. So that's kind of the broad picture. And then we get down to creating a nitty-gritty map for how do you do this? How do you discover what these core gifts are? And we're going to do that together in a moment. But first, I want to give you a framework. This is the framework that changed my life and changes my life. I promise you that's true. This is the simple framework where moving from this chubby, gay 8-year-old that was the part that I thought had to be erased, which is grievous because it was me, to a place where, in so many ways, I have a life that shines and gives and has a lot of love in it. Not that it's not filled with challenges, not that I am not humbled every day by my clay feet in terms of who I am in the world, because I am, but I still live in this place where there's so much radiance. So here's what it is. Here is what it is. It's the act of treasuring what's deepest inside of you. And I'm going to give you a physical exercise that you can do that can form a tiny practice that the more you do it, the richer and deeper your life will become. And the more you will become self-organized around your core gifts. So I'm going to teach you that. And then we'll talk about how to discover your core gifts. And then we'll talk about what that's going to mean. Okay. So here it is. It is this image of holding your heart, of holding the things that live in your gift zone with cupped hands. That's the image. Cupped hands. And so I'd like you to just take your hands and cup them together as if you are holding a baby bird, a tiny baby mouse, an orchid flower, like the orchid flowers behind Kari, something very precious. And just imagine that you're holding it like that and cup your hands in just the way that you allow it space, but there's a feeling of treasuring. That's what we're looking for. Now, I want you to try something else. Take your hands and make them flat. Kind of cold. You're holding this object, but you're not cradling it. You're just holding it like it's a thing. It's like this thing. Like this kind of just this material thing. You're just holding it like it's nothing. And picture this kind of holding. This is what we do when we pathologize ourselves. This is what we do when we're constantly worried about how we have to fix ourselves. We're this transactional relationship with ourselves. Our self becomes this thing, this commodity. So just take a minute to feel what it feels like to hold your most tender self with no cupping, no cherishing, just pure objectivity and judgment. Okay, now let that go. And now the other thing that so many of us do that I know I am so prone to do is to squeeze, to try to make it different. Oh my God, this is terrible. I have to make it better. I have to make me better. I have to fix myself. It's not good enough. I'm not good enough. And now imagine squeezing like that to change who you are, to fix who you are, to erase your pathologies and what that feels like. And now let's go back to the cupped hands. Come back to the cupped hands, but now you're holding you, the treasure of you, your heart, your soul, your passions, your tenderness, your fierceness, your creativity, your sensuality. Hold that now with cupped hands. You're giving it space, but you're letting it know it's treasured and honored and worthy. And feel what that feels like. And imagine if you held yourself that way in the world, what it would be like. Just take a minute to imagine that you went around holding your heart, your soul, your essence, your foibles, your flaws with cupped hands. How beautiful you would become. Okay. You can gently let that go. That's the image. And, you know, I'd love people to write to Kari and tell her what that was like to do, what that experience is like, and what you picture it would be like to live that way. And I assure you that there's so much joy in that. And It ain't easy when it comes to holding your flaws like this, your insecurities. It's a practice, but it is a gorgeous practice. And then when you do this thing where you can actually take your places of immaturity, of reactivity, of self-suppression, of self-sabotage, and hold those with cupped hands, because you know that at the heart of that is one of your deepest core gifts, then you have another tool. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to help you find your core gifts.
Kim, I'm going to just pause you for a quick moment there, because I would love to hear, and you may be going here, but I'd love to hear, because I know when I started this work, for me, I heard all this and I was like, yeah, that sounds great, but I'm really different. Like, he's talking about normal people and normal people's mm-hmm. gifts. And I'm like, I'm one of the really weird ones. And so I would love for us to just maybe, and maybe you're going to go here, and if you are, then we can just move there. But I'd love to also hear, what are some of the gifts that come, like, what's one of your wounded gifts?
Yeah, that's a fabulous question. And thank you for that. And, you know, I was sensing we needed a pause too, before we move to the next thing. So thanks for being like right on that. And then asking a question that'll help make this kind of more solid for people.
Yeah, I know that this audience is just an amazing wide range of thinkers who are all thinking outside the box. And when we start thinking outside the box like that, we also become, at least in my experience, we become the accumulation of a lot of different ways of thinking. And we become like these, you know, I think of myself sort of like a library of different ways of thinking and being. And it's really helpful here to be with, like, what's this mean when I take, you know, this whatever, this wounded part of me? And there's actually a gift in there?
Exactly. Okay, so I'm going to give some examples from me. And I'm going to talk about one that I'm working on now in my life. Mm-hmm. And these are two character defect places in me. I would call them character defects that are humbling to me and that I wrestle with and struggle with, that I've had to do the work to say, what would be the core gift in here? And one is a quality of timidity and fear. And the other is an intense need for attention and having the focus on me. These are not things I'm proud of. So I had to say to myself, what on earth could be the core gift in these places? And I used the processes that we learn in the intensive. And here's what I came up with. So there is, I remember once, many years ago, a psychic said to me, he looked at me, he said, there is a timidity about you, and your defense against it is not very pretty. It wasn't nice. It wasn't a nice way to say it. But, you know, that was a long time ago. That was almost 50 years ago, and I've never forgotten it. I've never forgotten it. So there is a timidity about me. There is a softness, a tenderness, a desire not to make ripples, a desire not to hurt, a desire not to make waves. But it's also like filled with self-doubt, and there's a fear. And that fear largely comes from the trauma of being both a child of Holocaust survivors and a gay kid who was bullied. So there's so much fear. So that fear makes me reduce myself, pretend I'm less than I am, not speak my truth with self-doubt so that I self-sabotage, not take up my space, all those different things. And I said, what is the gift in this? And in asking myself that beautiful question, I discovered that at the heart of that is a deep quality of humility. My power animal is a sparrow. There is some part of me that so adores the quietness, the timidity, the humility, adores. But our greatest wounds get mixed up with our deepest gifts. So those wounds of fear have like joined with that humility to make me stay small when it's not authentic to stay small, mm-hmm. to cover myself up. That was my learning. But I learned that this beautiful sparrow is at the heart of that problem. And that changed things for me, because now I see the sacred piece in it. And then the other piece is this love of attention. So that's a problem. I like to be the center of attention. And I'm mortified by that, especially my humble part can't believe it. Just can't believe that I have this, like, all about myself kind of part. So how is that a quality? How is that a core gift? Well, it's a core gift because I'm a teacher and because I am bursting with ideas. And much of my desire to be known is that I'm exploding with excitement about the things that I want to share. I have a big personality. I have a personality of someone who presents. It's funny that I have that intense humility and fear, and also this other one. But I love that part of me too, because it's my bigness and my wildness. And the universe gave me both of those. Anyway, it took me really a long time and a lot of thinking to see those as gifts. The simple one is my sensitivity, which, you know, I have been mortified by my whole life. And then I learned to discover, amazingly, that that's exactly what my clients wanted to see in me, and that made them feel seen. So these are just some of my examples, but I'm going to give some other examples that people say, how is this a core gift? And one is...
Can I offer one of mine?
I'd love that.
I'm like, oh yeah, because actually just in connection to this event right now, and I shared this to you before. So one of my wounded places is that I grew up off the grid, and I grew up not having any technology and not knowing what was hip, not knowing. I actually didn't screw in a light bulb until I was 17. Like, I didn't know how to do anything that normal people knew how to do. I knew how to split wood and to, I was a voracious reader, and I knew how to do lots of physical things, but I hadn't lived in the modern world. I came out into the modern world and I was so lost. I came out, I actually spent my first year of school at Smith College, which is a pretty smart school. And I hid all the time. Like, I didn't let anyone know who I was, right? It was terrifying. I actually also had made all my own clothes on a Treadle sewing machine. I was so eccentric, right? So eccentric. And I came out into the world and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I am the broken, weirdest thing ever. When I looked around at all these people who knew what was happening in the media, and I still don't know any of the things people are referring to when they're referring to social media. I didn't grow up with it. It was for a good deal of my life something I was really shy about. And yet in my heart, I knew this was one of the things that made me so incredibly perceptive, like this ability to see through the bullshit, like, bang, like, I don't get caught up in all of the frosting on things, because I don't even know what the frosting is people's talking about. And I hear the thing that's underneath, and I see the thing that's underneath. Like, I recognize, and this has been one of the most beautiful pieces of re-owning myself, is then being more public about it. Like, in this event, actually, I've been sharing with people how I grew up, that I grew up really differently, because I'm recognizing that simultaneous, like, disconnect or unknowing of what the rest of the world thinks is cool and hip and in also allows me to be really authentic about what I experience and what I experience in someone else.
How incredible. Isn't
that
how
really incredible. Interesting.
It's so fascinating. And it just captures that the very part you thought you had to abandon or disown or get away from.
Or catch up.
Yes. Wow. And then I would just say, knowing you, that there's a quality of capacity, like a vastness about you. Mm-hmm. And somehow I would think that that's connected too.
Interesting. Yeah, I would actually say that would be another place that I really thought of as a wounding, which is my ability to go out and be able to hold a huge picture. And I actually think it is all connected, but a huge picture of what's going on in such a way that I would often feel not really connected to the other humans, like the ability to see the really big picture and also get like, wow, what, you know, what are all the humans doing down there? That seems really out of place. It was a disconnect, but it was an ability to, the ability to disconnect, or the wounding of disconnection, also had the gift of big seeing.
Yes. Right?
Being able to see the really big picture.
And then when
bring
you
bring that back as a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. When you can own that and then say, this is a gift, that means you can be a part of the world with this, you know, kind of visionary gift. It brings us back in.
And brings me, as you're saying that, brings me to like why I created this event. Because I wanted to bring, it's so funny, right? That seed there is like wanting to bring all these amazing people together to share their ideas. Because from a big view place, I see there's a lot of information out there, out here, that'll be so useful as people if we shared our ideas more, if we expanded our minds and hearts more. Yeah.
And you're using technology to do that, which is fabulous, because now you can reclaim that, because you reclaimed kind of your dignifying of self.
I'm dignifying it.
And so this is great, because this is a technology-based event for all of us who have been so outside the box. And now I'd like to work with everyone to help them actually discover their core gifts. You know, what are yours? Like I talked about some of mine that I first felt embarrassed about, or, you know, deep wounding, and Kari talked about hers. So I'm just going to say one thing first. Here are some core gifts that people have tended not to think of as core gifts. A deep need to be listened to. A deep need to be seen and reflected. A deep need to be made to feel special. Now, pretty much invariably, everybody who's embarrassed about that deep, deep need and doesn't know how to call it a core gift wants that for the world too. It hurts them when other people don't get it, because it's a core gift of theirs. They want it for themselves because it's a facet of profound intimacy that is their language. So those are some. Another is, I just wanted to mention those. And now I'm going to like break this down into three areas. So think, folks, have there been qualities where you have felt like you are too sensitive for the world? We'll start with that one. Too tender for the world, too feeling. And how were you shamed for that? How was that? How were you stepped on? How were those parts of you neglected or not given oxygen in your relationship? Have there been any people or environments that have celebrated that part of you? That's the prototype. So that sensitivity is one of your greatest core gifts. It's a soul gift. I promise you this. What it means is that you have a vast amount of nerve endings, a vast amount of sensitivity in your antenna to the world, and that is sacred. But until it's honored as sacred, we turn against ourselves. So I want to propose to you that that deep sensitivity is a soul gift to be treasured, to be celebrated, to be held with cupped hands, and to actually lead in the world with that. Because when you do that with dignity, you will lose your taste for people who don't get it. I swear this is true. You will start becoming allergic to those things, and you will start gravitating toward people who treasure it. So that's one, gifts of deep sensitivity. Another is a fierceness. What about like have you gotten in trouble because of your love of truth, because of your truth telling, because of your ambition, because of your will to power, because of your love of heights and bigness and ambition? Because of the juiciness of how you speak truth, have you been made to be ashamed of that? That is another core gift. That is your contribution to the world. And how about those of you who have both of those, deep sensitivity and that deep fierceness? How amazing is that? And what a gorgeous, gorgeous blend you're built to become. And the third one is differentness. ways in which you felt like neurodivergent, emotionally divergent, creatively divergent, like just different. That like, you know, that in a group of people, if you bring certain things up, they're going to look at you like you're nuts. They're going to diminish you. They're going to walk over it. They're not going to get it. How many times has that happened to you? Qualities where you have differentness, those are meant to be treasured. And when you live in a felt sense of treasuring these parts, well, you're living love when you do that. And your intimacy journey will shift dramatically. And for those of you who are looking for love, when you do these things, and then you only look for people with whom your soul feels safe and seen, your world will change. That's how I found love. That's how the people who work with me and do this or other personal growth work learn to find love. By cherishing these parts, dignifying these parts, leading with these parts, and only now looking for the precious people with whom those parts feel celebrated. For those of you in relationships where there's not enough intimacy, it's the same journey. It's the finding words to share these parts of yourself. So this is kind of the bigger picture. And when you do this, what happens is, it's like in physics, the more mass an object has, the more gravity it has. Your mass is yourself, your sense of self. The more you do this, the more self you will radiate, live, and be grounded in. And that means the more gravity you'll have. And gravity is a force that pulls outside things into the center of you. That's the definition of what gravity is. And that will happen for you, but it'll happen more and more with people who really resonate with who you are. And that's kind of the magic part of this journey.
Yeah, that piece around only being, choosing to be with people or choosing, I would say it happened for me in my friend circle too, and like choosing them out in the world, those that my soul, my essence, my gift feels safe with and feel honored, right? And this, I for years have used a different set of words around that. I say, do I like myself when I'm with this person? And I think it touches on something similar, but not quite the whole piece. And what you're offering here is that we're like this essence of us, if it is safe with somebody else, right? When it's really honored, that means we can show up with them and be so much more full in ourselves. We get to be our whole selves with this other person.
Yes, yes. Whole and when we have that mixed with friendship and mixed with in an intimate relationship, mixed with sexual attraction and commitment, mixed with that goodness. I mean, that's the journey. That's what we want. And that's why this intimacy journey, where we start from the inside out, is a sacred spiritual journey that's life-changing.
And I know from having been on this journey a good part of my life looking for being met, really being met by somebody else, that the way that the dating world is set up is not inducive for us to come heart, soul, spirit, gift first, right? It's actually a place where we're really, in many ways, taught to come from our persona.
Yes.
And what do you have to say? How would somebody wanting to show up from their core, from their essence, both with family and friends, but I also would say right to the heart of it in looking for a new partnership, how do we do that in a world that is not inviting us to do that?
Right, right.
Like it feels really vulnerable. I know for myself, it was really vulnerable.
It is really vulnerable. And so I'm going to answer this in two different ways. The first way is, how do we go against the current of the culture, against all of the shoulds, to embrace who we are and follow a path that we really, and our own internal kind of like pullings toward not such great stuff. How do we go against that? And how do we build a new world? inside and in our behavior? Well, the research has a very clear response to that, and it's pretty unequivocal. And that is that you find a template that you believe in and that feels right to you, that you resonate with. And then you find support and an environment in which you can practice, learn, fail, experiment again and again and again and again. 95% of people that try to build new important habits fail over time. The 5% that succeed, and there's great research on this, are usually the ones who find a template they believe in and find a community of support, whether it's a coach, whether it's this intensive, whether it's any of those things. That is like kind of, I believe, the path. So you look for a path that resonates for you, whoever that is, whatever that is. And then you build a community so you're not alone, because you're not going to be able to do it alone, because the whole world is conspiring against that. And God knows the dating world is. So that's one thing I want to say. The other thing is, this is a piece of magic. When you learn to treasure your core gifts and you make the decision that you're going to only look for people with whom your soul feels safe, in other words, your goal, one of my clients who's now happily married, he was out in the dating world and he said, I changed my whole approach. Now, when I go on a date, my intention is I'm going to lead with who I am and I'm going to look to see with whom that resonates, as opposed to, does she like me enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do I like her enough, et cetera, et cetera. So he did that. He changed his entire intention in dating. And what he came back and said was that what was amazing for him was that his fear of rejection diminished dramatically because his intention had shifted. He now had a different goal. It wasn't, will she like me? And am I attracted to her? That's what it used to be. Am I attracted to her? If yes, does she like me? It became, I'm going to be my essence. I'm going to be myself. And I'm going to look for those amazing people where we sync with that. So that really helps with the fear of rejection. Once you make that commitment, I will only be with someone with whom my soul feels safe.
Yeah, it's actually the question I ask my friends who are out in the dating world right now, like, does your soul feel safe with this person?
Yeah.
No, it's like they go on a date and like, that's the first question, not, do you like him? Do you like her? Are they cute? But it's like, hey, how's your soul feel when you're with them? And it really cuts through the chase.
It really cuts through the chase. Yeah. Because with the right person, this is what you get. Oh, I kind of feel like home. Mm. And that's the most amazing feeling.
I'll share that when I first met this wonderful man that I'm with, my experience was, all, you know, the noise of like, oh, is this person right? Is this person whatever? And then I've been practicing very much, you know, coming back to my core and being like, Kari, you just get to spend time with this person from your gifts. And so we went on a walk and it was really from a place like the conversation and my being was really from, oh, I'm going to show up with who I am. Oh, I'm going to bring this part out and see whether this part's safe. Oh, I'm going to bring this part out and see whether we can have a conversation here. We had the absolutely most delightful. We didn't want to stop talking because we ended up both bringing out the things that I would normally hide away in the closet were the pieces that were coming out wanting to share. And it was really an incredible practice in my, first of all, might be even bold enough to be able to say, oh, I don't want to be with somebody that I don't feel absolutely safe and treasured with. So I'm going to bring out all these pieces and see how they feel here with this person. And amazingly and wonderfully, he experienced that as an invitation to do the same. It was just the most absolute fun experience. Yeah.
So beautiful. And that's like a living depiction of this spiritual journey here. That's like what you did is like, that's everything that you just captured it. You just captured it with that story. That's when we shift our whole approach of dating to a soul-based one with discrimination. Yeah. Gorgeous. I'm so happy for you too.
Thank you. Thank you. And I also wanted to add that I was also really okay if the time we spent that was what it was, because I had such a wonderful time just being authentically me.
My invitation
for folks is that like that becomes the practice, not necessarily, oh, I feel safe with this person, so now they must be the right person. But like, what if we just practice feeling safe with people and started showing up from there? Oh my gosh, it's juicy and fun.
Yes. And then you really, really, really get to protect yourself. And so I always think of it as like the difference between an exoskeleton and an endoskeleton. An exoskeleton is when you don't have a spine inside, so you have to build armor. That's mm-hmm. what we have to do when we don't have that core of self-honoring. When we come from the core of self-honoring, mm-hmm. this is who I am, this is who I'm going to be, and I'm going to look for someone who gets that and treasures it. All of a sudden, we have a spine, and our exoskeleton, our armor drops away. But we're safer because we have a spine.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I love that. That ties in for me to a word that I've heard you use, and you dropped it in once today, and I would really like to put it out, which is when we dignify ourselves. What does that mean, Ken? Because I feel like this is all, we're putting language out here that I would like people to take away with them. What would it mean for people to be dignifying themselves in this context?
When you hold your heart with cupped hands, you are dignifying yourself. When you're squeezing yourself to be something else, you're not. When you're holding yourself with coldness and lack of treasuring, you're not. When you're holding yourself with cupped hands without even thinking about it, you radiate dignity and self-honoring. And it changes your field. This is something I say to people in the intensive after we do the first stage, which is the discovery of your core gifts. And then the second stage, which is the deep shifting of your attraction patterns. I tell people your field has shifted. Get out there and play and experiment, because you will be attracted to different people and you will attract different people. And that's a magic thing. And it's something that really happens when we do this self-dignifying. So that's my simple answer to that mm-hmm. question. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one other thing I want to say is, this is a whole other thing, but I just want to say, if you're used to being with people who are unavailable or don't honor you for who you are, which for many of us, like we spent years doing that. When you meet someone like this, you might experience what I call the wave of distancing. And that is where all of a sudden, like the person's not going anywhere, there's no drama, you don't have to convince them of your worth. Well, all of a sudden it feels like their worth plummets because they're like just there. So it brings up our shame. And on a deeper level, it brings up the scariest thing of all, which is an available person. That's really scary because that means the rubber's going to hit the road. That means you're going to really meet. That means you're more vulnerable. That means you might have a future together. So our psyche diminishes that person. And I spent decades being single because the wonderful people I met, I would diminish them in my mind and then I would flee. So, you know, in my book and my course and my intensive, I talk about that a lot. But the simple solution is this. The simple solution is don't flee, but don't pressure yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you need to back up a bunch, just be with that person in ways that you enjoy. Go for a walk with them, laugh with them, pull back a little bit, but don't flee because your psyche needs a little bit of breathing room. It's having a spasm of fear. So even if you have to pull back sexually, emotionally, to some degree, stay connected. Just give yourself breathing room and space. And almost always this will pass. But if you don't do it, it'll suffocate you. Hard lesson that we never get taught.
Yes, yes. And I know you speak about this as attractions of deprivation versus attractions of inspiration. And I love those two terms. So I just want to lay this out there, that we're really trained in our society to be looking for somebody who's would be attraction of deprivation. I believe this has been a lot of what I've seen out there, is the sense of looking for someone who's going to, you know, be cool and aloof, and that you have to work for, and that makes them valuable. versus somebody who actually also shows up with their gift first gets to be someone who's equally like really available. And that can be intensely scary.
And you need to learn to ride those waves of fear, but it's not so hard because they're a wonderful person. And the chemistry of the healthy connection will free you from the hypnosis of the fear if you just don't pressure yourself and you keep enjoying the person. Yeah.
And Ken, overarching all of this that we're talking about, and people who know my work know that I work a lot with consciousness growth. And so we're really looking at, you know, shifting a consciousness around who we are in our relationships and our intimacy, whether we're dating or whether we are in a long-term relationship. I believe part of what you're offering is that there's a way we shift how we're conscious in these relationships. Does that sound accurate to you?
Help me understand what you mean more, because I want to speak to it, but say more about shift.
There's actually a consciousness shift that's occurring. So there might be a way that we've been taught to be in relatedness to ourselves and to society, right? That is, you talk about like we're expanding our neurons, we're creating new pathways, we're finding different ways to orient to ourselves and to each other. That actually is, in essence, a consciousness, a growth in our consciousness.
Absolutely.
That's been my experience. That this whole project of growing myself in my life really is like, you know, it's a spiritual growth project. And I've been growing myself my whole life. And then to be able to bring in also, oh, I want to up-level the way I do relationships. Oh, this is actually not just let's go date and try to find somebody. This is about consciousness growth.
Yes, so much so. And there's an interesting thing about that, which is that doing exactly what you described in a relationship is scary. It's in a way like leaping off a trapeze and hoping the other person can catch you. And so it's scary. But here's a really interesting thing. The research shows that that fear increases desire, aliveness, appetite for life, erotic connection, all of those things grow by that fear. So if you're with someone who's essentially safe and you swing off that trapeze and share something that's really scary to share, and they meet you and they catch you, your eros is going to grow. Your love is going to grow. Your desire is going to grow. Your bond is going to grow, and you will grow, and your world will become bigger, and the circle of your love with this person will grow. So that's the kind of fear we want to be pursuing, not the fear of this unavailable person who doesn't treat us right, you know, trying to get them to love us, right? It's the fear that happens with someone who loves us and is present, and we choose to get more real, to be more alive and more present. That's scary magic.
And that's about living. That's about living, right?
That's about wild and awake, right?
That's about living more fully, authentically in this body being and looking for intimacy, connection with other humans from this genuine, centered, gift-oriented place. I mean, this is really, to me, when I know I've heard you mention like this being a hero's journey or an intimacy journey, like this is a rite of passage that we're talking about here.
Yeah. Am I going to be me in the world? Am I going to treasure and be me in the world? Because that's the only way you find your tribe in most cases.
And the ones that we get to be closest to.
Yes, yes.
Ken, thank you. This has just been a really stunning, beautiful, tender journey with you today. And it's really been an honor to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kari.
Ken, there's a few things. If people are looking to be able to contact you, what's the best way to find you?
Well, there's a few best ways. I would say that people who are interested in this 6-month intensive, which I'm actually interviewing for now at this point,
this next round, right? Is this next round coming up soon?
Yeah. In mid-April, mid to late April. So I'm interviewing people. We have an amazing group developing already. So you just go to deeperdatingintensive.com. And you can find out about that there. People who more generally want to learn about my work can just receive this free gift, which I adore, because it's an ebook with 5 keys to deeper intimacy, all of which have gone viral on Psychology Today and been read by millions of people. And then the inner mentor meditation, which I adore, I do every day. It's my favorite practice. And I give you an audio meditation of that. And then also a journal where you can keep your insights, the gems of your insights that come from doing that meditation. So once you do that,
really
you'll be
generous,
connected.
Ken. This is incredibly generous. Thank you.
I'm super excited about it. It feels like a real gift. Yeah.
If you
do that, you will get on my mailing list and you'll hear about everything. But you can also just go to deeperdatingpodcast.com, join my mailing list there. But I think, you know, that if you just want to join my mailing list, the simplest way is get yourself these gifts because they're gorgeous.
Sure. That's wonderful. I have those as well. And I'm like, wow, those are wonderful gifts to be given. Thank you.
Yay.
Ken, this has just been absolutely beautiful time with you. And for all of our listeners listening in, these adventures that we're on right now with Wild and Awake are really about expanding our minds and our hearts and our lives and being able to lean into living with more vibrancy and aliveness and curiosity in the way that is really core and authentic to you. And I deeply appreciate Ken bringing a piece to the puzzle today around how do we find and honor and really give ourselves the beautiful gift of ourselves in all the dimensions. Thank you.
Yes. And Kari, I just want to thank you because there's like a purity to your teachings, a simplicity, a purity, a clarity, like a lack of clutter, a lack of transactional qualities. Very pure. And that deeply comes across. Maybe it's even connected to that magic of the wilderness and being off the grid, but there's just a pure flow, from what you do that is just, I just love it.
Thank you, Ken. And Ken is demonstrating right now one of my favorite things and one of my favorite tools, which is when we see the gifts in another person. Yeah, thank you, Ken. I just received that with a My heart is just, thank you for seeing me. Mm-hmm. And thank you for everyone who is here with us today. Aloha.
Thank you. Aloha.